Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 7th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Good, good. Great. As always, D.R., great to have you along. Mm-hmm. So, let's see, the Red Sox opened in Cleveland, although they were delayed because it was too cold, and we here in early April in New England had an unlikely snow shower over the last few days, but mm-hmm. spring's coming, the Red Sox are coming, another thing that's coming at us in the not-too-distant future is some new energy legislation on Beacon Hill. Mm-hmm. The big bill, the word people should know is the omnibus bill. It's a bill that's going to include a lot of different kinds of energy policy. And I got a chance to catch up with Carol Oldham, who's the executive director of MCAN, the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, to chat with her a little bit about what's in the omnibus bill and what we ought to be preparing for. So shall we go to that sound and then we can talk about it?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Boom. So we caught up with Carol Oldham, who is the executive director of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. How are you doing, Carol?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, very well. So it's my understanding that there is something called the Omnibus Energy Bill. Omnibus,
yes,
meaning everything thrown into one bucket. The Omnibus Energy Bill heading for the Massachusetts legislature sometime soon, right? Tell me what's
up.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, so this is basically everything that the legislature in many ways should have dealt with throughout the session, but hasn't had an opportunity to do yet or hasn't been able to agree on. So this is, they're going to toss it all in one bucket and hopefully get some really good stuff passed and hopefully not any bad stuff.
That's right. Only the good part of the sausage, not the bad part of the sausage.
Yes,
right?
Of course. That's what we hope. So just in terms of what we're hoping that we will see in there, what we're hoping we won't see is some sort of giveaways or subsidies for gas pipelines. So, you know, there are all these gas pipelines that are proposed for Massachusetts. And one thing that the legislature could do, which would be a really bad choice on their part, is to say, hey, you guys get to charge the gas companies get to charge whoever they want for these, because what they want to do is they want to charge electricity customers for gas pipelines, which hasn't been done before and we think would set a really bad precedent. And so we're hoping that that will not be in there. If it is in there, then basically everybody's going to oppose the bill. Mm-hmm. There are all these groups who are working on energy issues and climate change issues across the state. And it's not just green groups, but it's also, faith organizations and neighborhood groups and stuff like that. So everybody's going to oppose it if these giveaways for gas pipelines are in there. Mm-hmm. But what we do hope to see is a good offshore wind provision. Mm-hmm. So, we have this huge capacity for offshore wind off of Massachusetts coast, and we would like to see some specific language that says that there should be at least 2,000 megawatts of offshore wind developed. And this is like way further out than Cape Wind, so it wouldn't be visible. It's in, and that would make it a lot less controversial. But there's just a study that came out from the University of Maryland, and then another study that came out from the Union of Concerned Scientists that showed that if we go really big on offshore wind, it's actually going to be way less expensive just because they have economies of scale. So if we start at 2,000 megawatts, we're just going to be a lot better off as a state. So there's that. And then we're not sure whether solar is going to be in the energy omnibus bill or whether it's going to have its own separate bill. But there's a bunch of things that we would really like to see for solar. Solar is a huge job creator in Massachusetts, and we're really a leader on that. And it's stalled out a little bit recently because of the uncertainty. Businesses don't really like uncertainty. neither do I. And so, you know, it's we really want to provide some certainty for them to do business, to continue to do business in Massachusetts. So I think one really big thing is getting rid of the caps mm-hmm. on net metering, because if we're just increasing them incrementally in these tiny little increments, we basically bump up against them. I was talking to a solar developer yesterday, and I said, okay, so if we got 2, 3, 4%, how long would that last you? And he said, well, it would basically be everything that we want to do, we would apply for permits, but it wouldn't even be any new projects that we haven't conceived of yet. So we really need to get rid of the caps altogether. Mm-hmm. And we also, one of the crazy ideas that the utilities are really in favor of is to have a minimum monthly bill. Oh, so if you had solar on your roof and you were getting 100% of your electricity from your solar on your roof, they would still be able to charge you a monthly fee, which is just a terrible idea. It disincentivizes solar, and there's no reason to do it. And you know, why should we be giving them candy even when they're not
they're not good kids.
Anything in return, right? It's a terrible idea. So those are sort of the two big pieces that we'd really like to see for solar, whether that's in the energy omnibus bill or whether that's in its own separate solar bill.
Well, Carol, that's a very interesting, shall we say, laying out the table. I hope you can come back sometime soon. We'll have a more detailed discussion about this stuff. Can you
absolutely
make some time?
I'd be happy to.
Oh, great, great, great. Well, look, thank you very much. And there you go. That's the omnibus energy bill from Carol Oldham. Take care, Carol.
Thanks.
Bye. So there you go. That's Carol. And one of the things that I don't know if you paid attention, I'm sure you did, but at the end of that discussion, we talked about the fact that the solar bill, the quote unquote solar bill, about solar panels, photovoltaics, and whatnot, that might have been broken out separately. And of course, between the time I talked to Carol on Tuesday and here it's Thursday, what happened? Yeah, right? Out of the sky fell an independent solar energy bill, right? Tell me, what's in the bill? Should Climate Hawks be happy?
Well, the Massachusetts House did pass a standalone solar bill that would raise the cap on solar net metering by a bit while lowering the reimbursement rates for solar energy. This is according to the Springfield Republican. Mm-hmm. The bill passed the House 152-1 and is now expected to go to the Senate. The lone dissenter of the bill, Jonathan Hecht of Watertown, said that this is a bill that's essentially going to gut the solar energy industry. It was born of a debate that's been going on for several months between a bill in the House that really savaged the solar industry and a bill in the Senate that nurtured it. According to the Springfield Republican, currently the cap on net metering, the practice by which someone can generate solar energy and receive a financial credit mm-hmm. for energy they generated but did not use, has been stalling solar energy across the state. The bill is going to lift the cap on solar net metering by a whopping 3% on both public and private projects, and it will decrease the reimbursement rate paid to most solar energy producers by 40%, unquote. So it's been, you know, despite this, the sort of the lobbyists for the dirty energy industries are still whining about it, when in fact the real grievance ought to be by those who have pointed out that we need as much solar as possible to you know, maximize the benefits of clean energy and avoid the worst impacts of climate change. So
I heard the guy on the radio said that I hate the word environmentalists nowadays, mm-hmm. right? But solar energy advocates are going to hold their nose and vote for this bill mm-hmm. because it's much, much better than the original House bill, as you said, which
yes.
would have been serious damage. But it's by no means as good as it could be. But you know, we got to be pragmatic, right? Take the money mm-hmm. and run, so to speak, and keep moving forward. I think
there was a report in the Associated Press basically making that point, in which they said that, you know, advocates of solar power are basically, a lot of them are of the idea that one quarter of a loaf is better than none.
Well, I think that, I mean, as you correctly said, I mean, it's just for people who don't know all the sort of underpinnings of all this, right? The net metering, which is the idea of being paid for the electricity that you produce on your site, and that the meter on your wall goes back and forth and you pay the net metering, the net of what you produce and what you use. I mean, that's a big issue, and they have raised that limit by 3%, which from what I read basically means that come early January 2017, we're going to be right back doing this same thing again, right? We're going to
exactly.
be, and maybe that's good news, because maybe we'll, at that point we'll be able to break some of the badness that's in this bill, but at least we get to keep things chugging forward for a year, right?
I mean,
3% is a small, and then the other thing they've done is to decrease the value of the solar RECs, right? The SRECs are 40% less than they used to be. And, you know, I think that, I mean, I guess I don't have the data. I don't know the details. But the argument is that the price of the solar panels is dropping so quickly that you don't want to have exorbitant payoff to people. And so, and I think some solar advocates have said that the SRECs should be scaled back a little bit. Although, I mean, for me, I mean, again, not being an economist here, it seems to me that the SREC should be high because the general value long term, in 100 years, it's going to be good that we spent some money on the SRECs to get solar panels in there, right? And to sort of be doing our calculations right now on a much narrower calculus is not the best thing. But anyway, long and short of it, the bill is in there and it's better than it could have been. Right.
Yes, I don't think it thoroughly, you know, decimates the solar industry the way what happened in Nevada did, but certainly it's not anywhere near what needed to be done. And that if you had elected officials who truly understood the moral and economic need for more solar power, I think we would have had a much stronger bill. Put it that way.
Well, and I think that a couple of things. So I got one more complaint about the bill, right? The other complaint about the bill is that they have, I am told, right? So I haven't read the bill. I mean, I've been trying to catch up. My understanding is that the bill allows the utilities to petition the Department of Public Utilities, the DPU. So the utilities get to ask the regulators, can we please charge a minimum fee to every one of our customers, and that's likely to happen because the DPU is bought and sold, right? But the end effect of that is that there will be some small charge on a house even if they have 100% solar, right? And the argument that the utilities make is that the person with 100% solar on his roof is a free rider who's using the electric grid and not paying for it, and therefore he must pay this minimum fee. You and I have argued that's a bad argument, saying that the solar panel on the person's roof is a net benefit to the grid. It makes the grid better, and so that person shouldn't have to pay some minimum charge. But this minimum charge is kind of a point of principle. I'm not very happy it's in the bill. But having said that, the bill is much better than what we saw out of the House of Representatives last fall. And the fact that the bill is better is because people like the people listening to this show went and talked to their state representatives, right, and gave them a tongue lashing. And so if we know that we're going to be back to it in 2017, have to rewrite this bill again because the solar cap is only 3%, we should be preparing now and getting out there ahead of the curve and telling our state reps we want a much stronger bill in 2017, because they are listening. They listened once already, right?
Exactly. It's quite literally sunlight is the best disinfectant. And you mentioned the solar tax. It's been pointed out that there's no maximum tax, that tax could be theoretically whatever, you know, the utilities lobby for. So again, it's the perfect example of taxation without representation. And isn't it interesting that you know, after 40 years of all these, you know, groups like, what was it, Citizens for Limited Taxation, all these sorts of groups that basically say we're taxed enough already, no more fees, all of a sudden the utilities get to assess a tax. We have tax and spend. utilities. Isn't that interesting?
You know, it's all in the framing, DR. And so the utility gets to charge a fee, a minimum fee, right? Now, if the situation were reversed, people who hate taxes would be, their heads would be blowing up and we'd be calling it a tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we can call it, you know, as a sort of progressive side, you can say, yeah, that's a tax, right? That's being
exactly.
imposed by this, basically by the state. And mm-hmm. it rejiggers the way you think about these topics, right?
It is taxation without representation.
Yeah, especially because I'm sure the utilities are paying attention to you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So the solar bill is there. We'll put up a description of the solar bill. I think it was at Mass Live, and you referenced the Springfield article. So we'll put some stuff up about what's in the bill. I think that as of today, the Senate will act, and then it'll probably go to Baker's desk, and we will have a solar bill that is significantly better than the original one that we could have had. It is significantly mm-hmm. better because of citizen action. But it's not where we want to be. So we're going to have to keep hammering away at that one.
Exactly.
Now, the other thing I just wanted to come back to is the omnibus bill, right? So the omnibus bill is a second, whale, a second dinosaur marching through the state house, right? The mm-hmm. omnibus bill has all kinds of stuff in it. It's got probably what they're called carve-outs for wind, which sort of demand that a certain amount of wind energy be used, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the features that could be in this omnibus bill, and I keep making the joke about how, you know, all the sausage gets put into the omnibus bill because there's so many things you can trade off, right? In the omnibus bill, there's a potential that the utilities will ask for permission to put a fee again on your electricity rate to pay for these natural gas pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I've been getting letters from people saying, please call your state representative to tell them to put into this omnibus bill a line of legalese that says the utilities cannot charge electric ratepayers for their natural gas pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I would, I mean, if you're looking for something to write your state rep about, please do so. That's an issue that they need to hear about. I think that from the information I've got is that someone named Representative Kulik is the guy you want. You want your guy to contact Representative Kulik. You want your state rep to contact Representative Kulik and tell him, you know, to put in the bill this thing prohibiting the utilities from charging electricity ratepayers for their stupid pipeline.
Exactly. I mean, these proposals between the utilities wanting to tax you for solar and the utilities wanting to tax you to build their pipelines, it gives new meaning to Taxachusetts, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're back into it.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of citizen action, Diarna, and the power of citizens, we were talking before about something you'd heard from a gentleman named Stinnett.
Yes, Nathaniel Stinnett, who's a political consultant who's launched an entity known as the Environmental Voter Project, which can be found at environmentalvoter.org. In a recent presentation, he discussed the fact that there are a lot of Americans, including a number of people in the state of Massachusetts, who put climate change and the environment at the very top of their list of political priorities,
mm-hmm.
but they're either not registered to vote or they have not voted in years. So basically what his entity does is that he finds these voters, he finds these citizens, encourages them to vote consistently, with the idea being that if more citizens concerned about these issues show up at the polls, it will force politicians of whatever political persuasion to basically pay attention and to start taking the necessary actions to move on this issue. He had noted in his presentation that 277,000 residents of Massachusetts who claim that climate change and the environment is their top issue did not vote in the last gubernatorial election.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had voted, you have to imagine that things would be a lot different. And if they had voted in terms of state representatives and state senators, you've got to think that that would have resulted in a much stronger solar bill.
Right.
So what Mr. Stinnett is doing is of paramount importance because, again, as we always say, power concedes nothing without a demand. And he's basically encouraging people to make a demand for clean power.
So tell me, how did he find these 270,000 people here in Massachusetts? I mean, that's quite a claim, right? What did Carl Sagan say? Extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof.
Yes, he uses a data analytics system and a voter file system to compile which residents of a given state and which residents of the country rate climate change in the environment on top of their issues. They also use a number of surveys to compile this listing. Mm-hmm. And he's identified nearly 16 million U.S. citizens who, again, claim that climate change in the environment is in their top tier, is at number one or number two of issues, but they either are not registered to vote or have not voted in years. So the purpose of this initiative is to get them to the polls and make sure they're consistent voters. In this presentation, you noted he made the comparison to the issue of guns and how people who fashion themselves as being pro Second Amendment, the thing that marks them is that they consistently turn out election in and election out. They never miss an election. And he basically said, imagine if voters concerned about climate change and the environment were that diligent in their voting patterns, you could see a complete energy revolution in this country.
So he's using kind of this big data meme to find people. And what's the mechanism of the website? How is he? Are they sending emails that once they've identified them? How's he trying to bring them out?
They use emails. They use person-to-person contact. In his presentation, he basically said that there's nothing more powerful than people being told that their neighbors are voting. So why aren't they voting? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes just that sort of nudge, almost if you will, a positive peer pressure, can get people to vote. And he's already demonstrated results. He sort of test marketed his concept here in Boston in the 2015 Boston City Council election and generated some very, very impressive results. So this is a project that is continuing to go on. And obviously, you know, when we discuss, you know, why is it that we have situations like, for example, you know, we've talked about the Lamar Smith situation in Texas, the Texas congressman harassing climate scientists. Imagine if he had a constituency concerned about the climate issue and basically made it clear that they will vote based on this, would he be so aggressive in harassing climate scientists? Yes. I don't think so. So it's one of those things.
Well, DR, I think that's very, I think we have to leave it there. We will tell our listeners that there is, we'll put up links to this stuff on the blog that's associated with the podcast, right? The blog is at www.massclimateaction.net/blog. Please leave a comment. Please let us know what you think. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction, where you can share the show so your friends can find out about this. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can also find us on iTunes, which of course is now the grandfather of all podcast distributors. So, DR, we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Indeed, thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We really appreciate it. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.